You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
It's the Anfield Wrap on Radio City Talk Liverpool. It's a somewhat dismal, drizzly day. We'd like the summer to spool out a little bit longer. It's doing its very best to let us down. More on the weather when we talk to Josh from Liverpool Loves in a little while. But before then, we are going to talk about the Reds. I've also got Paul Dehaney in, and we're going to have a chat to him about Spurs. They've done even less business than Liverpool, so if you need your mind putting at rest, Dehaney will help. That is coming after 7 o'clock. I'm also joined by Charlotte Campbell, and we're going to be speaking to Stephen Scheller about the Roto Fantasy League that he does from over in the United States, how it's better than any of the others, though I will always say that Fantasy League is not for everybody. However, the Liverpool situation and how long, still nothing happens on the main target. Still Coutinho feels like a thing. Charlotte, we haven't spoken to you much across the summer, so it's at least a fresh voice discussing this. It's fair to say that the Liverpool manager, the one thing they've been collectively is very, very focused. There's two footballers that they want. They're prepared to pay a lot of money for them, and still we wait, and still they look as though they're trying to force these deals through.
Yeah, it's madness. I mean, well, I wanted Van Dijk before the summer anyway. I didn't think we stood a chance. I'd never seen Keita in my life. Now I think I've only watched one YouTube.
What a YouTube it is. We've all watched that YouTube.
He is the player of my dreams. Now all of a sudden, if we don't have Keita, we've got nothing. Yeah, I know, it feels like a weird one. I don't even understand the money anymore, and it doesn't matter to me. I don't really care, pay 80, 100 million, because it's all irrelevant. I mean, everyone's got that sort of money. So it's a strange one. I don't know if it is just that they're not going to sell. I think there comes a tipping point, and it feels like it's probably around 75 million.
On Keita?
Yeah. And I don't think it feels that far away. I think Van Dijk will get done. It just feels sort of like you can't turn back from that now.
John, my personal cut-off point, and this shows the sway I have over Liverpool's transfer dealings, my personal cut-off point was probably this week, with reference to the idea that there's this massive training camp that's going on. They're all working very hard, riding bikes, jumping into pools. It looks a bit like a version of Centre Parks. but they are, you know, it's clear that that's where the manager's putting all of his work in for the season to come, and those camps are happening for a number of different sides right now. And I thought by this point, Klopp would have broken. You know, we hear lots about his own impatience and his feeling that he'll sort it on the training ground, and yet he's done the opposite. It's tons and tons and tons and tons of patience from Liverpool. There isn't alternatives being linked yet, and so you just sort of think that there must be a confidence there they're going to pull at least one of these two deals off.
Yeah, I think so. I thought I was looking at the Germany trip as well, and thinking, you know, is this where they need to be having it done by? And but Jürgen just seems so relaxed about it all. You wonder whether it's because of the positions that the player is in as well. If it was a forward, I think he's so specific about what he wants to do. He's already talked about the fact that Mohamed Salah doesn't defend properly, which must be lovely for Mohamed Salah to hear. It's like, what on earth is this fella going to have me doing?
Does he want to show me?
Yeah,
what I'd be saying.
So what I'm sure he is, but I think for Jürgen's teams, it's a lot of it's about passages of play, a lot of it's about what you do off the ball. And I'm not saying that other teams, you know, are so wildly different, but I think for a centre half, maybe he's a little bit more relaxed, and maybe he's thinking, well, how much pressing is this fella really going to do? You know, I want him stood there heading stuff away, to be honest. And so I think maybe for Van Dijk, that's why they're a little bit more relaxed about doing it kind of later in the window, and they understand because of everything that what happened. Keita, I mean, I'm sure he'd want him in, but maybe, you know, he just looks so perfect for the Premier League and so perfect for this side that maybe he's not quite as worried about that as well. And also, what you've got to remember is that Jürgen, I think we can obsess over that first game of the season, whereas Klopp might be thinking, do you know what, if I don't really use until October, that's fine. And I think we can, I think, you know, as football fans, we can think, oh yeah, we want him out there. We want him out there against Watford. Oh, he's going to be absolutely brilliant straight away. And I think football managers do think about it slightly differently. And he'll be thinking about a long season, lots of games. And, you know, it might, because we were sound at the start of last season.
Well, this is, I want to go to Paul Dehaney on this, because we're going to get Paul to talk about Tottenham at the end of the show, but also sort of as an ongoing thing in that there's lots of talk about Tottenham's lack of transfer business, and let's talk about Liverpool as well. Is there a problem that we forget what our football teams do really quickly? So, for instance, last season Spurs got 86 points. They won 11 of the last 12 games. Correct me if I'm wrong. No, Liverpool started last season absolutely flying, played some of the best football Liverpool have played since 13-14, and if you take 13-14 out, the best football they've played since 2009. Are we just guilty at times if you've got really good players, and I think, but if we had Liverpool and Tottenham managers both here, they'd say we've got really good players. Are we guilty of sort of forgetting how good our really good players are, and therefore how hard it is to actually buy people to improve on them?
Exactly that. I mean, if we look at us, for instance, we've managed to keep hold of Dele Alli, Harry Kane, Eric Dier, Alderweireld, Vertonghen,
yeah,
as well as the you know, Dembele and Wanyama and these sorts of players. I mean, there isn't much weakness in our first team. In fact, I'd go as far as to say if everyone's fit, we've got a fantastic first team. And then also we've got players that are coming back from injury like Danny Rose and Lamella and these sorts of players. So I don't think, if you look at it not just from Spurs' point of view, but from your point of view as well, if you feel as a manager that you've got a good squad that's improving and you can see improvement moving forward, and then you can also look at your youth academy and you can see a few players that could be coming in there,
yeah,
and stepping up to the level. Why are you going to go out and spend 20, 30, 40 million on players that are just going to essentially be squad players that you're going to call upon them and they're not going to be ready to play anyway because they haven't played all season? I just feel that in Klopp and Pochettino, they're a bit more confident with what they got. And I think that...
So is this the price of being good?
I think that if you're a manager that is famed for development of players, then you're confident with your lot. I think what I've seen with particularly Mourinho and Pep Guardiola is that they're good managers, but they need to have, from what it seems like, and history has shown this, they need to have the very, very best players in order to complete their project. Whereas our two managers seems to be able to get the best out of players who might be playing for another manager and not play as well. Do you see what I mean? So I think they've got a lot more confidence in the development. And that, I think that's not just the managers, but the clubs as well.
Go on.
Well, I'm all in for development, I agree. I'm happy to see players like Trent coming through. But Klopp, while he's confident with his team and while we did look good at times last season, he was making murmurings throughout the season that he was light on players. And that was without Europe. So there's no point standing still. I think that's also what it is. It feels like you're standing still. And even though I'm looking at the players Everton have signed, and I'm not envious of them, and I don't think any of them would get into our 11.
None of them can sprint.
Yeah.
They demonstrated that last night.
Last night, yeah. But I'm not envious of them, but it is that panic when you see them building up, you know, he signed him.
Yeah. Everton, Man United, for instance, finished 17 points behind us last season. 17 points, right? So in my mind, I'm thinking, you know, let's go through it. You know, City finished 8 points behind us. Yous, 11, Arsenal, 17. You know, Everton going into the 20 odds. Now, from my point of view, everyone's saying, oh, if you know, this is not Liverpool. This is from Tottenham's point of view. Everyone's saying, oh, if you don't spend, you're going to stand still. But hang on a minute, we're not the ones that are playing catch up, are we? This isn't a flash in the pan. This is the last two seasons we've finished above nearly everyone, yeah, over those two. You know, I don't really see the panic. You're people panicking more than what we are.
I think, Charlotte, on that, I think it's more. I wonder whether or not I don't think Liverpool should stand still. I think Liverpool should be looking to move forward. But it's more that moving forward becomes harder than, for instance, and I hope we buy this player, but you know, if the window ended now and the only other addition was Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain on top of what we already have, you could say, well, we are stronger, but it doesn't feel like a great stride forward. And as I say, I think he's a good player. Whereas I think it becomes difficult, doesn't it? And this is what we're seeing, to make that great stride forward. Eighth to fourth is an easier stride, an easier improvement than fourth to first, where the improvement in the football has becomes more incremental.
Yeah, I think Salah's also a bigger stride forward.
Oh,
than
yeah.
People are giving
oh, yeah.
He looked absolute. All pre-season, he's looked great. And I think because it was done quite early, and because the price isn't madness, I mean, 35 in this transfer window, that's nothing. I mean, that's a mid-tier player in the Premier League. But I think he is a massive addition.
5 million more than Michael Keane.
Yeah, I think he's a huge addition and a massive improvement on us next season. He is what we were missing. But yeah, I just think we stumbled towards fourth last season, and now we feel safe because we were fourth and it was fine. But it was very touch and go towards the end. We could have been fifth, sixth easily. So I think that's why the panic, and that's why it's different to Spurs, because Spurs kept that, you're continually improving, but Liverpool did stumble towards that.
I definitely think that the defence, you know, if you could get my man from Van Dijk from Southampton, that would be an unbelievable buy. I don't know where you're at with that, whether it seems like it's going to happen or not. John's looking. Everyone's staring at John, looking for some answers. Come on, John.
Well, the latest is. I mean, I don't know. I think people kind of expect it to be done, and I think there's a kind of happy medium between kind of what we're talking about in terms of continuity, and also, you know, the idea that you definitely need to spend. And I kind of understand all the points on it. I'm trying to understand all the points on it. But I think there was certain things that you looked at last season that we definitely needed to do. And I think that's kind of what Charlotte's talking about, is that, you know, there's already good talking about continuity and developing players, but there was just obvious gaps. And one of them was the pace where Mane went. And that's why I agree that Salah's such an important signing. But I think a centre-half as well, I think that would be one that worried me if we didn't go in with one more centre-half. Ideally, it'd be Van Dijk, just because I think you looked at the average points when you could get Lovren and Matip on the pitch, and looked at the average points when you couldn't, and it was the similar drop off to the Mane one. And so I think, you know, it's all about, you know, making sure that there isn't a huge drop in standard when one of your centre halves is out. And so I think if they need to make a decision on Van Dijk at some point, and they look confident that they're going to get him, and so well, good for them. And you know, they know more about these things and this current situation than I do. But I think that's one that would worry me. I think all the others, I think even Keita, who I'm in love with as well, even him, I think, you know, you could make an argument not to take a step down.
I'd rather go in with a centre-back than...
Yeah, indeed.
Just quickly as well, the other thing about continuity, John, is that you've got to keep continuity, i.e. the Coutinho link. This is where, you know, if there is going to be continuity for Liverpool, one of the things that means is that you, even though I think you can make an argument around... You can make a Rafa Benitez argument around selling Coutinho and buying one or two other players and all of that sort of stuff. You can do that, but you can't do that while you voice, and whilst the manager goes out of his way, and whilst whenever anyone at the hierarchy of the club speaks, they do mention the importance of that continuity.
Yeah, and it's absolutely vital that they keep him for lots of different reasons. And I think he's just such a leader in the team in terms of how they all look up to him as well. I think it just deflates everyone if he did go as well. I think he's so key to our play because the other players make him, and I don't think necessarily the plan was always to do that, you know, but they just always look to give it to Coutinho if they can. And I think he's become so vital to kind of how we play, especially when the chips are down, and especially when we need him. You know, he's the one who rises up, he's the one who his teammates look to. I think you would not quite have to start again if you didn't have Coutinho, because of course he misses games and you know, we get by. But I think it would be a few players would be looking around in the squad and thinking, what now? Or, you know, starting to, you know, I thought the interviews that the guys did with Jurgen Klopp were exceptional out in, considering they only got 15 minutes each with him out in
Glen and Mel,
Hong Kong. Yeah, I thought the way they did was great, in very different ways as well, which was fantastic. But the thing where he was, one of the things that came out of it was confidence, and how he tries to not just install, but repeat this idea of confidence into them, and how sometimes players can listen to the wrong people and can listen to people saying, "Oh, everything's going to be awful," and he's saying to them, "No,
people like
no,
us,
yeah, people like idiots like us," and he's saying, "No, no, you're brilliant," and how players can be turned by kind of crisis talk from elsewhere, and so based on all that, I think, you know, he'd have a big job to do. I think if Coutinho would left for quite a few members of the squad to reinforce the belief to them that they can go on and achieve what we want to this season.
I'm still kind of miffed about this mystique that the media's created with Real Madrid and Barcelona, almost as if they come calling, you've got to leave.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if you guys remember, but, you know, I remember in the 80s and 90s, when Barcelona and Real Madrid were crap. Honestly, well, that sounds really weird.
Now, Barcelona won their second European Cup in about 92, didn't they?
Yeah, but I mean, there were periods in that time where, you know, the way you see with Milan now, who are just starting to come back from sort of out of the doldrums, you know. But it's almost like we create this mystique about Real Madrid and Barcelona with our media, and it's like,
they are winning those European Cups as well. They're
doing all right. I'm not saying that.
It's not only that, but every single time Barcelona have got a transfer thing, it's not. It's why people are equating the Coutinho thing with the Keita thing. It's completely different. They use the media to lowball every club. It's like a 6 month media campaign where players will start.
They did it with Bale.
Oh, we'd love Fabregas at our club. Oh, Fabregas would really fit in our club. Okay, 10 million. That's the difference. Whereas we go in with mad money for Keita, that's why it's different. Mm. Firstly, I don't think Coutinho's going anywhere. I think it's a nothing. There's no chance Klopp lets him go. He let players.
Has there been an actual bid?
Yeah, there's been a bid. 70.
Has that been confirmed by Liverpool?
Yeah, it seems clear enough. There's been a bid. Yeah, there's been a bid. 70 million quid.
Okay.
But first, he's not going anywhere. I think, as far as all the reliable journalists have said, he's happy. He's fine. He's not going to kick up a fuss. Klopp has proven that he will let players sit on that bench and burn out their contract rather than let them go. He did it with Lewandowski. He let him burn out his contract. I don't think he'll go anywhere. And not only do I think that it's a bad thing in footballing terms, because he's one of our best players. But even then, like I watch games where Coutinho is not the best player on the pitch, but selling him represents something, and it represents that you are then a selling club. Getting new signings in, I think that becomes a lot harder. That you've let your star player go again. You're at the bottom of the pile again. Emre Can's then looking at it, thinking, "Am I signing a new contract?"
I do think the Champions League thing has a bearing on him staying. Really, you know, I think if you weren't in the Champions League, I could see an argument for him going. But he's been working to get into the Champions League with Liverpool, and it'd be strange if he turns around and says, "Oh right, I'm going to leave now." Now, you know, I think he's at least going to stay for the next season.
This is the Anfield app on Radio City Talk. After the break, we'll be having a chat about Liverpool loves. Welcome back. It is the Anfield Wrap on Radio City Talk. In front of me now, I've got Paul Dehaney, John Gibbons and Josh from Liverpool Loves. We will be talking to Paul about Spurs after 7 o'clock. But we're going to have a chat about Liverpool's exciting City Centre Festival. Going to be with you next weekend. Firstly, Josh, the weather. Are you optimistic?
It's always sunny. I
mean, Liverpool Loves is always sunny.
Yes. We've got a weather witch in the office, so we're doing sun dances all week this week. But to be honest with you, you're not supposed to talk about the weather, so I'll let you off this time.
Is that a thing, is it? Well, we've got Paul Dehaney with us, who, as we know, in the past did Africa OEA, and he got the weather of the gods this year on Africa OEA. I don't know who he paid off for that one, but he managed to pull it out the bag.
It was our 25th anniversary. We deserved it.
You deserved it. You had to come in. Just start, I mean, having the pair of you here really to talk about it. But Josh, first and foremost, it's now the third year that you've been doing it, and it's growing and growing. It's remarkably exciting. I had a great time last year. I'm not just saying that because you're here. I had a great time last year. I had a really good day down on the front, and I think that's more than it. It says it's called Liverpool Loves. The vibe of the festival to me does appear to very much be the idea that you want as many people as possible to just have a great time. That might seem a bit simplistic, but it is sort of what you're about.
Definitely, it's a feel-good festival. You know, the reason why we created this is because we love our city. We're from the city, and we're proud to be from Liverpool. I think really the whole nature of Liverpool Loves is a showcase of the best of life in Liverpool. You know, we chose a couple of themes in year one: business, culture, food, well-being, and really it's a platform for independent businesses, emerging artists, for you know, anyone and everyone to get involved and really showcase what they do.
Yeah, I love it. It's fantastic. I've kind of been involved, I guess you'd call it, since the start. And I think the first year, the guys obviously took a punt on it, and it was funny because you're asking kind of bands to get involved with something that they don't really know too much about, and you know, you're kind of pulling in favours and stuff like that, whereas now kind of most bands I know in the city are asking to get involved and you're having to kind of let people down really, or kind of pick and choose, which is a bit trickier. But it's that just shows kind of how much fun the bands have enjoying themselves playing, and it's just got a really nice vibe about it. It's a really nice weekend, one I look forward to now, and I only come at it from a music point of view, obviously, but as I say, all the bands last year kind of you hung around all day, and that's a really good sign as well, whereas if bands are doing gigs and stuff, they'll try and get there as late as they can and then off and leg it, but loads of the bands just kind of hung around, supported the other ones and just kind of enjoyed the vibe of what was going on, so that's a really good sign as well. So I think
that helps.
Yeah.
You're not allowed to talk about that. You told me off. You told me off, and you're not. You know what I mean? On just before we get back onto the music, we'll come onto that towards the end, Josh. We'll talk about what else is going on, because that's the thing. It's not just music focused. It is about sort of getting people understanding what's going on in the city centre.
Yeah, well, I mean, normally we have a business event that comes as part of the festival weekend. We've moved that back this year. It served as like the sort of launch of the festival 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
It's like a sort of SME conference, seminars, networking events, opportunities for people to come together and share ideas and push the city forward. But for the main festival, it is really a big public celebration. So first year it was 27,000 people on the pierhead. Last year it was 40,000 people. And to see it grow, it's really exciting, you know. It's a mayoral-backed initiative supported by the city council. We've had lots of really good involvement. And again, because it's a platform, you know, people like John and yourselves and, the guy at Liverpool Soul Fest, who are also involved in this year's main stage programme. Again, all the artists, you know, it is that platform. Aside from the music element, you know, food and drink is obviously there because, you know, you need something to eat and drink on the day. And it's all part of the experience. But the sort of difference with the festival this year is because it's moved sites from the pierhead and into Liverpool One. It's a little bit of a unique thing, really. It's not been done before. It's a bit of a first. It's happening on Chivas Park. There's going to be a second stage at the bottom of the steps.
Really?
On Thomas Day's Way next to the Hilton. That's called the Culture Box stage. It is a sort of it's something that has happened before on previous editions of the festival, and that's more of a sort of community focused stage. We've got a range of international performances from, we've got African drummers, we've got the Chinese community are doing traditional Chinese dance and music. There's choirs, there's a project that we're delivering for communities, which is getting young people out of North Liverpool who are in social isolation to come together and share a sort of collective arts experience, and they're going to perform at the festival. So it really is a community focused thing. It's for the people, by the people, and it's a celebration of Liverpool.
And the big thing is the music. You got booked and all that sort of stuff lined up. It's as strong a lineup as you'd have, if not stronger, to be honest with you.
Definitely. I mean, obviously, you know, we're the organisers and we don't do all the work. People like John, people like the guys Kelly and Tony from Soulfest really have put together a brilliant lineup this year. So obviously, again, previous editions of the festival have been over one day. This year it's over 2 days, Saturday and Sunday, 5th and 6th of August. The main stage is located in Derby Square, where the courts are. So it's a nice little, unique environment.
Nice little sort of stretch between there and Chivas Park, nice gaps, nice walk in between, and good for the local industries as well, the bars, the restaurants, etc. that are sitting there.
Definitely. It's bringing business into the city.
Yeah.
You know, it's been brilliant down on the pierhead. There's other things happening in the city now. Things do change. So we're looking towards what this event might be in the future. We want to expand into the city centre. It needs to be that go-to date where people come from outside of the city into Liverpool to experience what we're all about. And again, it's that platform for people to get involved. The programme itself on the main stage is brilliant. On Saturday, we've got Robert Vincent headlining for the guy at Liverpool, with Pixie, Delfina Kings, Sub Blues, brilliant urban artist.
And the Soulfest aspect looks terrific.
Yeah, Soulfest is brilliant. Cherry V is the headliner for Soulfest. She's coming up from London. But we've got some brilliant local artists like Milo Tain and Raheem Alameen. Really, really good artists. You know, I'm a dance music fan personally. And when I going through all the artist forms and everything else, and we're picking who we're going to have on the festival, I'm really surprised about and inspired by all of the amazing talent that we've got in the city. And again, that's what this festival serves to showcase.
And it says here that the Sunday was curated by John Gibbons, young up and comer, hard working, handsome.
Used to be.
How excited are you, John? What have you got lined up?
Yeah, dead excited. I love it. So it was, as I say, it was more difficult for me in terms of who to leave out, really, but. In sort of no particular order, well, the order I've got in front of me, so I don't forget anyone. Edgar Jones, which is boss. Natalie McCool, who's obviously been on the rider as well, as we featured a lot. And then loads of really exciting bands in the area, up and coming especially. Red Rum Club, The Shipbuilders, Stillia, Boston Shakers, The Protagonists, The Racket, Owls and Joshua Hall. And so all local, all really exciting, all doing well and set to do even better. So I'm kind of made up that they've all agreed to do it, and very varied. It's going to be kind of, you know, something for everyone on that Sunday, so I'm really pleased with it. And very entertainment as well being the key.
And the main thing, let's just go back through the details. It is across Chivas Park, one end to the other, from the Hilton through to the Crown Court. It is on Saturday the 5th and Sunday the 6th of August. It does have all those fantastic artists that have been mentioned. There is all the other stuff going on. Why wouldn't you go down, Josh?
Don't know, it's free.
And there's a heat wave that weekend.
Dehaney's boxed it. He's got the ability.
I'll hold him to that.
Yeah. You don't argue with him. He sorted this stuff out. It's a professional level. He can call favours in. Liverpool Loves. Listen, Josh, thank you so much for coming in. Liverpool Loves, I'll say it again, the 5th and the 6th, from 11 a.m. on the 6th and from 12 noon on the 5th. All the stuff that's going on there across those main stages and what you've got down by the Hilton as well. Everything that you need. This is the Anfield Wrap on Radio City Talk. Always good to support things like Liverpool Loves. After the break, we'll be having a little chat about fantasy football of all things and speaking to Paul Dehaney about the fact that Spurs have bought even fewer people than Liverpool. Don't go anywhere. It is the Anfield Wrap on Radio City Talk. Neil Atkinson, Paul Dehaney, John Gibbons, Charlotte Campbell. I'm joined now by Stephen Scheller, who runs the fantasy football roto game that we love to play here on the Anfield Wrap. Not everyone, but then fantasy football doesn't have to be for everyone. But what I would say is that if it is for you, then this is the best way you can do it. Before I come on to Stephen, as I'm talking up his game and perhaps embarrassing him slightly, we had a lot of fun last year, didn't we?
We did, yeah. I mean, there was a lot of frustration as well. I'm not saying it was all, you know, fun and games. There was arguments. There was internal battles. There was crisis of confidence in my camp. So, you know, if you want something to dip into for 5 minutes a week and just pick your team, then
it's not this.
No, it's not this. If you want something to all consume your life, make you hate your friends, despise footballers who aren't doing the business for you, and suddenly get very interested in things like net tackles, then dive in.
That's all very fair, isn't it, Paul Dehaney? you got very into net tackles. Michael Keane became your favourite ever footballer.
I discovered Michael Keane. I resurrected his career and everything. He got a move to Everton all on the back of me. But yeah. What I love about this game is that, I was explaining to Charlotte before, unsung people like, you know, Danny Drinkwater and Michael Keane, these sort of characters that get you no points at all on other games, get you tons of points on this game, and just makes it, it's more for the football connoisseur. You know, if you're going to play this game, as people were alluding to earlier, don't think about having a normal life at the weekend, because it will dominate. But
2 o'clock on a Saturday when the teams are announced is the most important time of your week.
Definitely.
No chat about that, Stephen. I mean, there was a few bumps last season whilst you were launching it, and we were all working through them together, but now it's, you're in good shape and you're looking forward to it this year. Is that fair, mate?
Yeah, I think so. I used to look forward to the start of the Premier League season, and now it's like the most stressful time of my life. getting very few hours of sleep. We're working through a bunch of stuff still. We're still kind of connecting a few things here and there, but it's going to be running a lot smoother, a lot faster this year, and a lot of new features. And some really exciting stuff.
I mean, just to talk about sort of the genesis of it for you was the idea that, you know, and I know that Paul plays NFL draft stuff, that fantasy football in the United States, partially given the nature of the way in which the sport develops statistically, that the main American sports, it was much more detailed, much more intense. Whereas this, you were looking at sort of a conventional sort of fantasy footballs in around the UK and around the game, and you were thinking it just wasn't up to what you were used to.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the draft selection is the biggest issue, but then also trying to figure out a gameplay that adds value. You know, like Paul was saying, to the Michael Keane, to the Davis. I mean, he's kind of like a hero to teams that yep. picked him up last year. So, you know, there's a scoring system in fantasy baseball that we kind of adapted to Fantasy Premier League, and that's the category-style scoring. So, and it really works well because, you know, scoring in football is generally, you know, pretty low. You don't get many 7-0. And so we wanted to come up with a game that, you know, would, you know, create a higher probability of a draw and also reward players that don't end up on the score sheet all that often. So that's how we came up with the category scoring.
And it's important to say that, you know, people can't have the same players because the draft system, that you play against your friends, that you play against people you're in a league with, that it's adversarial rather than just the accumulation of points, Steve. And it's very much, you know, you can tailor your tactics for a given weekend up against the manager you've got. So if you come up against someone and they've got Aguero and Lukaku up front and you've got no good strikers, well, you have to try and find other ways to win.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, we do offer point scoring, which is kind of the more traditional way, and we allow you to customize your scoring so that you can, you know, you can make tackles worth, you know, a point and a goal worth 4 points if you want, so that, you know, you will get a deeper player pool and value from guys who aren't traditionally high scorers. But with the categories, you know, I mean, I say it, and it's maybe a little snooty, but I say, you know, some people like checkers and some people like chess. And this is definitely more on the chess side of things. I mean, I love checkers too, don't get me wrong. I mean, you know, you can see what your opponents are going to be playing. I mean, depending on who's going to be in the lineup each week, you know, even if you do have Aguero and Lukaku, you know, one might be injured or one might be sitting because of Champions League or something. And so then, have to retool your lineup and, you know, maybe crowd the midfield.
Yeah, don't get me started on the variants that Champions League football and squad rotation could throw into this season, Steve. And I've got lists and reams and sheets and fixture lists, and I can tell you for a fact that, you know, I know that Bournemouth and Brighton's fixtures alternate for the first 8 games. Anyway, as to who's at home and who's away. I've got all that stuff written down. It is very, very involved, and I think it's worth pointing out that it's very, very involved, but at the Anfield Wrap, because we're fans of this, we're doing something with it this year. So what we're doing is that you can join our league if you'd like to, and on our tour player thing we'll be doing approximately weekly shows. We might miss the odd one here and there, but approximately weekly shows about the update of our contributors division. Me and Paul Dehaney are in the same division. Charlotte and John are in the same division, and Charlotte's new to this. Are you intimidated by this yet? You're alright, aren't you?
I feel like I'm going to massively misunderstand the whole thing. How do the European fixtures work in? What's this?
They don't work in, but you'd have to obviously wonder if, like, for instance, they might your Premier League game, they might drop a player that you expect them to play,
right? Okay.
because of European commitments. So don't worry about
Pep
that.
Pep Guardiola was a nuisance last year for anyone who had Man City players. Yeah. Suddenly he's dropping someone boss because he's got a Champions League game midweek and people weren't happy.
Yeah, it was hard work. So, you know, that's the way in which it works. But you'll all be fine. You'll all enjoy
it.
Paul's backing himself at 12-1 in our league.
Yeah, why not? I mean,
the OEA Spurs.
I think that my advice to you, Charlotte, would be this year to learn the game this year.
Okay.
You know,
put the work in,
learn the game, and then, you know, next year go for the title.
It is meant to be fun. It doesn't have to sound like a job. Though we are,
it is a job, and it's not a game. It's very serious. Are we putting any money on?
We're not going to put money on it. I think it's so serious. We don't need to put money on.
Okay.
The winner gets to win, I think, is the main thing.
I reckon we should at least have a trophy of Champions League proportions. You know, those really big trophies.
Let me work on that.
Carry.
I've done badly by not listening to the show. Who won it last year?
The top division was won by Stu Wright. Mildly controversial. Division two was. There's only two divisions this year. There was three last year. Division two was won by me, so I've been promoted to Division one. Hung on in there, 3 points in the end. And Division three was won by Sean Walsh in the office, who's very good at things, isn't he? Walsh is good at things.
Sean Walsh wins stuff.
So he's gone up to Division two. So he's in your league this year. So if you want to come and be part of this with other Anfield Rap listeners, if you go to Roto Premier League, all one word, ROTO, rotopremierleague.com, and then you can confirm your email, yeah, when you hit the Join League button, you enter the code TAW and you'll be automatically sorted into a league with other Anfield Rap contributors and listeners, because I've got three teams now, broken down into 12-team divisions, and once one league fills up, another one's created, etc., etc. So you sign up at the same time as your mates if you want, but just get everyone playing, because there's nothing better than a late win. And if you've got any issues, they're at RotoPL, on the Twitter. So all of that's coming. And Stephen, you're excited, I think. I think you're thinking that this is the year where people really get to grips with this new way of playing this game.
Yeah, I certainly hope so. Like I said, people can play in the more traditional way with points, but I'm a strong advocate for the category scoring. I just think it adapts to the Premier League so much better.
We've made it quite straightforward, haven't we, for the listeners? It's not quite as in depth as our leagues. You have insisted to me that we don't absolutely batter them with detail year one, so it isn't quite as intense, isn't it?
Yeah, it'll be a slightly simpler scoring system for the public league that we've created. We've done a lot of work in terms of documentation and help and that sort of thing. So check out the blog that's on the site. It'll run down kind of next steps and how to coordinate, draft date and time with your league, as well as scoring. And we've got a bunch of player rankings and stuff like that up there. So that should help all the newbies out.
Massively so. And also on the Anfield Rap Facebook subscriber group, I've done a sort of a set of questions with my suggested answers. I'll show Charlotte later on indeed, and we can go through all that sort of stuff. I might even give you, might even give you sight of my spreadsheet if you play your cards.
Charlotte's going to win the league next year.
We'll all be sorry we helped her.
Indeed. Listen, huge thank you to Stephen. We'll have him back on doing further shows. We'll also Facebook Live at least one of the drafts, or the start of one of the drafts. We intend to do that for you as well. That'll be available, and I'll be making clear our randomised orders as well soon. This is the Anfield Rap on Radio City Talk. We're going to talk about Tottenham just after this. It is back with the Anfield Rap. Always good to speak to Stephen. But now we're going to have a chat about Tottenham Hotspur. We've got Paul Dehaney in to talk about this. I think we'll have covered all of Liverpool's rivals once you're done, Paul. And I've been sort of hanging off because I've been thinking, well, you know, back to what we were discussing earlier on. I expect Spurs to buy someone. It just doesn't seem like it's an urgent thing. And I think there's a number of people, I've seen Rory Smith's mentioned it, and there's a number of people for which it does feel like a little bit of an antidote to the situation. But the one thing I would say is last season I thought Spurs struggled a little bit to deal with the Champions League. Mm-hmm. And that'd be my worry. I think there's numerous positives, and it's worth saying that when everyone's fit, Spurs have got a really good first 11, mm-hmm. a really good first 18. But what was noticeable last season, what ended up probably costing Spurs breaking 90 points, was that first half of the season when, firstly, they didn't progress in the Champions League out of the group stage, and secondly, they were finding the weekends after those games pretty hard.
Yeah, but we've still got 86 points, and 86 points
wins
the league.
Yeah, it's a great number of points.
Most seasons, so I don't really put it down to that. I'll put it down to Chelsea having an unbelievable run in that period.
But don't you want to also have a good Champions League run?
You do, but I don't think we're at that stage at the moment where we can sort of say, right, we're going to go for the Champions League and the league. You know, I don't even think we're in the stage where really, if you took out the last two seasons, I would probably said you were mad if you were saying we were going to be going for the league moving forward.
Yeah.
So we almost like, we are ahead of ourselves, but now we're in that position. I'm not going to start saying, oh, let's go backwards or let's move. We want to stay where we are or move forward. The Champions League to me is a bonus at the moment, you know. Yes, we do want to get to, I definitely want to get out of the group stages this year.
Yep.
But more than anything, I want a few glamorous ties, you know, because since we've been back in the Champions League, there hasn't been that Real Madrid or my friends Barcelona or, you know, Bayern frauds. Or any of, those frauds. There's not been that kind of that eye-catching tie. So I'd like that more than anything. But I don't see it as, I still see the league as the bread and butter. And I still see the Champions League as something I'm happy to be involved in, or we are happy to be involved in, but it's not the be-all and end-all.
Is there a general vibe? I mean, you mentioned 86 points, but more than that, I think, you know, in that run, in that last sort of 12 games where 11 were won, is there a general vibe that two or three lads who needed to sort of proved themselves as being more than capable of contributing to this squad. So I'm thinking about Son, I'm thinking about Ben Davis, who for instance had a torrid time at Anfield, mm-hmm. but then is plays left back or left wing back in a side that goes on and has that run. Mm-hmm. So he's, you know, he can't be a mug. Mm-hmm. You know, he must be a good player. Mm-hmm. That there's a couple of others, Dembele finished the season strongly, Trippier. Mm-hmm. That there's that sort of four or five players either reasserted their quality like Dembele, mm-hmm. or for the first time looked as though they can genuinely contribute. And is that why you think Pochettino's relaxed?
Well, but what worried me about the previous two seasons that Pochettino was in charge was we tailed off towards the end of the season in both seasons. And that, you know, around Christmas time last year, I think, in fact, when you guys beat us 2-0, the general consensus was Liverpool would go on, and I think you were 1 point behind us at that point. You just come out of a bad period. And the general consensus was Spurs wouldn't really have the legs to get through the rest of the season. People like City, Liverpool, even Arsenal would find a way to get past it, even United at the time. But the opposite happened. We actually got better and we actually pulled away from everybody. And I'm not saying that's going to happen again, but what I'm saying is we seem to have sort of got over that hurdle of, you know, we seem to be able to get through a whole season now. I think the key thing is this season is getting points on the board early before the Champions League starts, because we drew a lot of games in that early part of the season that had we already got those points in the bag, then maybe the Champions League period. And also you've got to take into account is all our main rivals are going to be playing in Europe, whether it be Champions League or even worse, Europa League. You know, the likes of Arsenal are going to be Europa League, Everton probably, and all the other usual suspects. So everyone's got to go through that problem.
What difference do you think playing at Wembley is going to do to you this year?
If you listen to everybody outside of Tottenham, they'll tell you it's definitely going to make a difference and we're definitely not going to win one game at home at Wembley. I think Daniel Levy made a real good masterstroke by playing at Wembley last season in the Champions League, because what that means, I'd probably be a bit more, I'd be filled with more trepidation if we'd not played at Wembley at all, and then all of a sudden we're just starting from scratch. But because we've already bedded in and played those games, and actually we got better as the season, you know, stats will tell you differently, and mm-hmm. reporters will. But in the last three games at Wembley, we should have beat Chelsea in the FA Cup semi-final. We should have beat Ghent. We were down to 10 men for the half of the game, and we beat Cisca. So it's not really as bad as what people paint it out to be. I actually think that also, bringing in other players, if you think about it, not only would they have to get used to Tottenham, but they'd have to get used to playing at Wembley as well. So maybe that's in their minds, that they want to keep players that are used to have been playing on that big pitch.
The one thing that worries me a little bit, would worry me, is more, and I think it's something that, for instance, Liverpool suffer with. I think that the London sides have always had a strange issue with, for instance, there being so many London derbies. My only concern on the Wembley thing is suddenly, I'll use them as an example, Burnley are coming to Wembley, and it's, you know, if you're a Burnley player, this could be the only chance in your career you ever get to play at Wembley. And so that sort of unnameable, you know, untouchable 10% that we could just imagine, you know, that a player might just sort of think, well, I've got to grasp this moment and this opportunity. That, but then I suppose there's a flip side.
I'd counter that and, you know, Tottenham are a very, very fit side, probably one of, if not the fittest side in the Premier League. 65 minutes at Wembley Stadium on a massive pitch, a Burnley or a Bournemouth or a Huddersfield, these sorts of, you know, even West Ham, you know, loads of teams are not going to really be up for playing on a massive pitch, you know, for 90 minutes running their guts out. So, it's one of those where I couldn't say one way or the other. People seem to be definitely, oh, Spurs are playing at Wembley, that's it, they've got no chance. I'm more of the mind of, good players get used to playing wherever they need to play.
And then they get used
players
to it, and everyone will moan that it's an unfair advantage.
Mate, I said it last season. I guarantee you, if Spurs do well by Christmas time, people say, oh, well, the FA Cup final's at Wembley and Spurs are in there, so it's an unfair. You know, come on, man. You can't have it both ways. No, seriously, though, I really do think that could become an issue if we start doing well. And then Chelsea might be banned from playing at Wembley in the future when they need to play there.
Is there, you know, we talked about playing it cool on the transfer front. You can want to play it cool, but you must also yourself be thinking, you wouldn't mind a player like this, you wouldn't mind a player like that. Is there anyone who's in your mind as someone you'd like to see Spurs get
I think the Ross Barkley thing excites me, because I think I was saying to you guys earlier, there's no way we're going to pay 50 million for someone that's got 1 year left on their contract. But if he comes available for 25 to 30 million, he's the sort of player I think Pochettino gets hold of, makes him a fitter player, and you know, he's quite intelligent anyway. He's got more intelligence than people give him credit for. And I just think he needs the right manager and a change of environment. And if that's at Tottenham, I'd be happy to go along that. But alternatively, if we don't get him, I'm not going to lose any sleep. What you got to remember with Tottenham fans, we sold Gareth Bale for close to 100 million, 5 years back or whatever it was. And we spent most of that money on players. And really, I think Eriksen and Lamela are the only two that are left. I think we got to a stage as supporters in that point of how many years are we going to keep buying players who essentially don't really want to play for Tottenham. They want to play in the Premier League, and then they'll make their name at Tottenham, and like the likes of Arnautovic with Stoke now going on to West Ham, they want to make their name at a bigger club. I think now we're at a stage where we'd rather develop, I said it earlier, we'd rather develop the players. And I'm not talking about developing academy players that we've got no faith in. These are players that, you know, have come through a very good, strong academy system. And the likes of Harry Winks is a quality player, and he'll prove to be that. I don't really want us to go out and spend money on a Norwegian, or it's not even Norwegian anymore, is it? It's more mainly Spain and French player that could come in and really not do the same.
And the thing that surprised me is that there's been unless I've been not been tuned in properly, there's been very little noise about Kane, Dele Alli leaving.
There was a bit about Alli for a
they
while.
They try a new player every week, don't they?
Big noise about Kane to United last transfer window. I've heard
and
very
this,
little.
At the beginning of the end of this season, it's definite on. Eric Dyer was definitely going.
Well, Dyer was the one.
There was
the biggest links on Dyer. Dyer looked like for a few weeks it could be a genuine runner and rider. That you know,
I'd have taken that money anyway.
Well, he's in a strange situation, Dyer, where for instance he's, you know, he looks like he's neither first choice holding midfielder nor first choice centre half. But he'll get, you know, of 38 league games, if he stays fit, he'll get 32 starts.
He's a squad player that you want when you're in Europe, probably.
Yeah, well, he's a great number 12.
He's a player that will Pochettino will always find. Wanyama and Dyer,
you'll get them on the pitch.
That's his two favourite players, his go-to players when he needs a result and he needs discipline and people to play where he wants them to play. These are the guys that he'll always call upon.
And you mentioned there Winks. Are there another two or three players you're expecting to see kick on?
Yeah, I'm expecting Winks to come in. I'm expecting Josh Onoma to step up. Josh just won the Under-20s World Cup with England. Tournament that's never really got any coverage until we won it. But, you know, He's kind of always been there or thereabouts to be the kind of next one to step up. We've got young Carl Walker-Peters, which is really funny that you sell a player called Carl Walker and you have a player called Carl Walker-Peters that plays in exactly the same position. Very bizarre.
I mean, that's continuity, isn't it?
That's you what know, you call continuity. Yeah. But, you know,
Having Ronaldo and Ronaldinho.
Yeah. But to sum it up, look, I'm not saying we're going to go out and win the title next year, but the last two seasons have given me confidence enough in our manager and in the structure. In fact, we're moving to a new stadium this time next year. Is, you know, every time I go back to London and I go to Tottenham to see my mum, I see that stadium developing. You know, how can you not? Why are people saying on the radio that Tottenham have got no ambition? And why is Kane staying at Tottenham? Because they've got no ambition. For God's sake, what more do we need to do to show that we've got ambition?
And if you are Kane, you know, to talk about that sort of stuff, for all the fact that you can do jokes around he's one of our own, if you're Harry Kane, you want to play at that ground. If you're Dele Alli, you probably want to play at that ground. You actually want to get the experience of, you know, if you've come this far with the club, you've got a big milestone there. You will probably want at least one season playing at that ground.
I mean, if you're Pochettino, you want to manage at that ground as well.
Exactly. And I think you've made a really good point there, Charlotte, because I was just about to come to that. All of this would be irrelevant if we didn't have the manager that we've got in place. He's the one, he's the catalyst. And I think that if Pochettino, you know, was to say, I'm leaving tomorrow, then we'd probably lose four or five of those said players before the end of this window. So I think that's really the catalyst for us moving forward. I'm sure you feel the same about Klopp.
Okay, thank you very much indeed to Paul Tahaney for taking the time today. Thank you much to Charlotte and John as well. We've also been joined by Josh and by Stephen. That's been right the way through the Anfield Wrap this week on Radio City Talk. It's been, as ever, a real pleasure. Been a fantastic time in Liverpool. Have a great weekend. See you in a bit. Sports Social Podcast Network.